In his State of the City address last week, Mayor Mike Coleman laid out plans to revitalize the city's south side around Parsons Avenue, including a new neighborhood center, tearing down abandoned houses, rehabbing old homes, and building new ones, among other initiatives. The mayor also said there would be no quick fix.
And while this Southside Collaborative and new investments represent great strides toward progress in this neighborhood, we still have miles and miles to go to turn this neighborhood around.
Joining us right now to talk about the challenges facing the city's south side and the mayor's renewal plan is Columbus Dispatch reporter Mark Ferencek. He covers neighborhood issues for the Dispatch. Welcome back to the show, Mark.
Hi, Ann.
Coming up later, we'll be hearing from a couple of south side community activists, community leaders, and we'll also be hearing about the city's land bank program. So if you want to hang in there for that. Right now, for our listeners, if you live or work in the south side, what are your concerns about the neighborhood? What should be done to breathe new life into an area with so many problems? Give us a call, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. You can also go to the All Sides with Ann Fisher Facebook page, and you can tweet us at Ann Fisher WOSU. You know, Mark, when I just as I'm saying those words, breathing life into an area with so many problems, I immediately start thinking about all the people I've met in the South Side, Ganther's Place, all kinds of organizations and things going on there that people, it seems to be already on the way toward revitalization, and sometimes it can take a long time.
Right. It you have very concerned and very active neighborhood groups and concerned and active people in those neighborhoods. It's a working class area. For years, the people who lived there worked in the factories, the industries, the businesses around there. There have been drastic changes that have taken place over decades, but specifically in the past 5 to 10 years with the housing crisis, where you have scores of vacant houses in the neighborhood. You have people who want to work who can't find work. You still have problems in some areas with crime, obviously. But there is a grassroots effort, block by block, neighborhood by neighborhood sometimes, to try to bring the area back. It's just going to take a while. It was an area, again, developed around industry. People walked to work. They took the bus to work. How do you revitalize an area like that in the 21st century? And that's going to be the challenge that the city and the neighbors are going to face for the next number of years.
One of the, like Franklinton, a lot of the people in the South Side grew up there.
Yes.
So there is that backbone to it.
Yes. And what you will also find, too, is that there are people who are starting to move into these neighborhoods from elsewhere. Marion Village certainly is an up-and-coming area.
Kind of leeching over from Marion Village, right?
From German Village, right, down into Marion Village, and now to some extent even in the Hungarian Village, where I did a story there a couple of years ago now, I think, because people find that they like the houses, and you can get houses for a good price there, and you can fix them up. And you're just a few miles from downtown, and that's very appealing to a lot of people.
If you're just joining us, this is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News, and my guest is Mark Ferencek. He's the Urban Affairs and Neighborhood Reporter for the Columbus Dispatch. We're talking about the South Side this hour. If you have a question or comment, give us a call, 614-292-8513. We're specifically looking for folks who may work or live on the South Side, want to know what your concerns are about the neighborhood, what should be done to breathe new life into the South Side. The statistics are sobering. Unemployment rate of 20%, over twice as much as the state. A quarter of its residents live in poverty. One in five houses is vacant and or abandoned.
Yes.
And there's limited access to health care. Mm-hmm. So give us an overview of the what the mayor is proposing to address some of those issues.
What he's looking at is a multifaceted plan in some ways. Again, one of the key components of this is the site on Parsons Avenue, where the John Maloney Health Center is going to be built. Again, that replaces the older health center that they had to demolish a few years ago. Around that, too, they want to build, there's a proposal to build a 56-unit senior housing complex. And as part of that, as part of the development, too, there's a proposal where they're going to spend about $1 million in neighborhood stabilization money, which is federal money, to help build 40 rent-to-own properties, infill development within the area, basically along Innes Avenue, but also along Woodrow, to try to stabilize that area, basically. There's some resistance in the neighborhood to that. They are concerned about vinyl-sided houses in some cases, but they're also concerned about low-income residents. But part of the city's idea...
They're concerned about low-income moving in?
Yes, because at least that argument is you want more owner-occupied homes. How do you do that, though? Mm-hmm. The city's argument is we have to do something to create new development in the area, and this is a way to do that. So, again, it's tax credit housing. It's federally funded housing, but it's something new down there. And so it's those types of developments that at least the mayor's office is looking at to try to start to turn the neighborhood around at the farthest end of the south end in the Reposac area.
The mayor's pledged $11.5 million to demolish the 900 worst of the worst by houses in Columbus by 2016. Right. And the neighborhood bordered by Livingston Avenue, Lockburn Road, Thurman Avenue, and Parsons Avenue near Nationwide Children's Hospital has the most, I guess, 20% alone.
Yeah, there's
in that
a
area.
Huge cluster of these homes in that area, and there are more than 500 vacant abandoned houses just in that relatively small area. And again, that speaks, I think, to the problems that have basically hurt the South Side in the past 5 or 10 years. It's gotten to be worse just because of the housing crisis, the foreclosure crisis, and I think it kind of revealed some of the underlying weaknesses of the neighborhood. And to bring that area back, which, again, that they're trying to do through Nationwide Children's Hospital with the Healthy Neighborhoods Program and with John Edgar's group, Community Development for All People. They're trying to rehabilitate a lot of those homes in that area, but it's going to take a lot of time just because it's taken a long time for the neighborhood to reach that point. How do you turn around a neighborhood with so many vacant houses and so many houses that the mayor's office think are so bad that you have to demolish more than 150 of them just in that area? And once that happens, what do all those vacant lots mean? And what does that signify? And who will want to build on those lots?
Is there anywhere around the city that people in the South Side are looking to as any kind of a model, or anywhere they're looking around where there's a pattern that makes sense for them?
We did a story last year that there are certain areas of town that there are multifaceted efforts to try to rebuild areas based on assets in the neighborhood, such as Wyland Park, where, again, it's in between downtown and the university. So you have some assets there that they're trying to build off of. The area around Children's Hospital is something also that I think people look for. They're hoping that if enough homes can be renovated and enough people move in and people who work at the hospital can be convinced to live in the neighborhood because it's close, that will have some sort of a snowball effect. And that's kind of the same thing that they're talking about OSU East with the project there, where, again, Ohio State is using $10 million that it got in terms of tax credits because of the hospital expansion to help try to rebuild the neighborhood around OSU Hospital East. Again, there's some resistance there in terms of inclusion. People want to know what's going on to make sure that their voices are heard. But a lot of these efforts are based upon what assets are in the older neighborhoods and what can we build off of to do that.
Matthew in Columbus, you're on the air. Welcome to the show, Matthew.
Thank you very much. Glad to be here. Guys, I just wanted to mention, as a former Southside resident myself who did, in fact, renovate a home in Marion Village, bought it back in 98, there are a lot of great home buys down there. You guys are absolutely correct in that. There are a lot of working folks that would probably very much like to live down there. But the problem of the Southside is the same with the Near East side of Columbus, and that's the commercial corridors. Parsons Avenue is a mess. If you live on the South Side, you really have to drive away from a commercial corridor and go to another area to do any shopping dining or anything else that one would need to have a decent lifestyle down there. I can take my comments off the air.
Okay, thank you, Matthew.
Thanks.
Coming up later, we're going to have Bob Leakty. He's the executive director of the Parsons Avenue Merchants Association. But Mark Ferencek, want to respond?
I think if you look at Parsons Avenue, you can go to a number of formerly vibrant commercial corridors in the city. Again, West Broad Street, Cleveland Avenue, where people wish that they had stores to walk to that were close by. Now you got to drive out to major shopping areas around the Outer Belt. And the question is, and Bob will probably address this later, is how do you create an environment to not only bring in and foster privately owned shops, locally owned shops, and then try to build off of that with, if you hope, national retailers. Again, Subway is one that's close to the hospital on Parsons Avenue, but farther down, it's going to be a struggle. And that's something that they're going to have to deal with. There certainly are a number of people who want to be able to visit and frequent their neighborhood retailers, but it just doesn't exist to a large extent on Parsons right now, and it's going to take a while.
You're listening to All Sides with Dan Fisher. I'm talking with Mark Ferencek. He's the Urban Affairs and Neighborhood Reporter for the Columbus Dispatch. We're talking about the South Side, inspired by the mayor's State of the City address last week and his announcements of some pretty big initiatives down in the South Side. If you are from the area and have a question or comment, want to tell us what you think would help turn the area around, give us a call, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. We'll be right back. This is All Sides with Dan Fisher on 89.7 NPR News.
This is 89.7 NPR News. All Downton Abbey fans will love this Masterpiece Classic special. It's Downton Abbey Behind the Drama, and it's tonight at 8 on WOSU-TV. There will be behind-the-scenes footage, and the actors talk exclusively about their characters and the storylines across the series. They provide real insight into the romance and conflict, how they interact with each other, and how they feel about their characters. Watch Downton Abbey Behind the Drama tonight at 8 on WOSU-TV.
Support for the Statehouse News Bureau stories on 89.7 come from the law firm of Porter, Wright, Morris, and Arthur LLP, helping businesses and individuals solve complex legal problems throughout Ohio, across the country, and around the world. On the web at porterwright.com.
56 degrees with light rain in downtown Columbus. Showers continue throughout the day, and a chance of rain tonight as well, a low of 32 degrees. All Sides with Ann Fisher continues on 89.7 NPR News.
Today on All Sides, we're talking about plans to revitalize the city's South Side, which has struggled for a long time while other communities seem to get all the attention. But in his State of the City address on last week, Mayor Mike Coleman sent the South Side something of a Valentine, complete with a surprise announcement that a group of donors, including Donato's Pizza founder and chairman Jim Grote, will donate $3.2 million toward a new neighborhood center with job training, child care, housing, and human services help. Still with us is Columbus Dispatch reporter Mark Ferencek. Once again, Mark, welcome to the show.
Thanks, Jan.
And joining us now by phone is John Turner. He's the administrator of the Land Redevelopment Office in the Department of Development for the City of Columbus. He's the director of the city's land bank, established in 1994 to improve Columbus neighborhoods by returning vacant, abandoned, and underutilized residential and commercial properties into productive community assets. Welcome to the show, John.
Thank you. It's good to be here.
So can you tell us what the land bank's holdings are on the South Side and how that area compares to other parts of the city in terms of vacant, abandoned, and underutilized properties?
Sure. Overall, the land bank has approximately 900 parcels in our inventory. About maybe 180 of those are within the South Side. We hold both vacant parcels and structures, and we also demolish structures that we acquire. Most of our acquisitions are through tax foreclosures, and we try to acquire particularly the properties that have been abandoned by their former owners, and try to do something with them.
What's the tipping point in terms of whether or not you try to save it, renovate it, sell it, or demolish it?
It's a very subjective decision in that when we receive a property, we have the property evaluated by someone from our code enforcement office and our property managers. They go through both the outside of the property and the inside. And keep in mind, by the time we receive a property, the property has to be vacant before we put it into tax foreclosure. So on average, by the time we receive a property, it's probably been vacant for about 5 years or so. And these properties often have overgrown weeds, have been left open for a period of time, have everything inside stripped out that has any value. A lot of them were abandoned because of the condition. In fact, most of the properties that we receive, particularly in 2011, are referrals from our code enforcement office or our city attorney's office who were not able to resolve the code issue through the environmental court. So just the nature of the properties that we receive tend to be the worst of the worst. And we do an evaluation of the property. And most of the properties we get are fairly obvious. A lot of the properties are burned out. A lot of the properties have had a hole in the roof for very, very long time and have significant water and mold inside and have a deteriorated structure.
The county now wants to establish its own land bank, and I want to know how the two land banks will work and whether or not they will compete for resources. But just to follow up on what you just said, the Dispatch reported last fall that Columbus City Attorney Rick Pfeiffer said that the county's land bank would chop 3 months off the time it takes the government to acquire properties. How would that work? Why did he say that?
Sure. The county's land bank is actually a new model that was established by the Ohio legislature in,
2010.
Mm-hmm. Good. We have been around since 1994. We are, considered the old model, which is based in a city or county government. The new county land bank will be its own nonprofit entity, a community investment corporation. And they have a unique a way that they can send a property through tax foreclosure. All tax foreclosures basically start out the same way. The county prosecutor's office will initiate a case in the Court of Common Pleas. It has to go through a judicial foreclosure to clear title to the property. The main difference between the two land banks models is our properties always have to go to sheriff's sale, and their model will cut out the sheriff's sale and basically give a 45-day period where the current owner either has to make their taxes current or they lose their property to the county land bank.
Well, is there any advantage in the city changing to that model or a disadvantage?
I think there are two big advantages. One, by cutting down the time it takes to bring the properties through foreclosure, it allows us an opportunity to get the properties more quickly. Which may allow us to save some of these structures. Also, in our conversations with the county land bank, the county land bank is being established by the county treasurer Ed Leonard. We have a great working relationship with him. We send all of our tax through foreclosures through him, anyways. And in our conversations, we like to actually increase the number of tax foreclosures that we can send at one time. Last year, for example, we received approximately 177 parcels through tax foreclosure. That's the most we've ever received in 1 year in the history of the land bank. And if we were going to ramp up and meet the mayor's goal of demolishing hundreds of structures, mm-hmm. then I think we have to ramp up those tax foreclosures.
George in the South Side. Welcome to the show, George.
Hello. I'm a resident of Driving Park, which is contiguous to the area you're talking about.
Okay.
And one of the things that we notice is that with the increase of vacant houses, that investors are buying those houses and moving people in there. An investor does not care about the neighborhood. And I just hope that when the mayor has this initiative, that we look at more at home ownership and also grants, et cetera, for the people who are living in those homeowners in that neighborhood.
John Turner, is that the thrust of it, that you want to get more owner occupied?
Sure. The land bank actively sells property.
Right.
So we have an inventory of property that we're trying to get people to purchase from us and invest money and occupy either by rental or home ownership. We are lucky to have many people who seek to buy our properties, invest their own money, and then occupy the house later. That's really what we're trying to do, is get people interested in getting our properties and turning them into good assets.
Oh, Mark Ferencik, this is a tweet from Allie. Maybe you can answer her question. She asks, can you define the South Side? Is German Village and Marion Village in it? Or are we talking only about the other side of Parsons?
That's a good question. The South Side, I think in Columbus there's a perception that the South Side is south of German Village. I mean, to me, German Village is still part of the South Side of Columbus. But the South Side runs basically south of I-70, past Route 104 to the far South Side, which would be to basically down to I-270. It's a large area, but when people talk about the South End, you're basically talking about, you know, everything east of High Street, south of 70, north of 104, and around the Parsons Avenue area, that kind of area. So it just depends on how you define it. But the core of the South Side is that area.
And John Turner, as far as the county's land bank goes, to what extent does that help the South, your efforts in the South Side? Because, of course, not all of the South Side is actually in the city of Columbus, right?
Correct. Particularly if you go south of 104, the county land bank will be able to bring this power, I guess, of local government into areas outside of the city boundaries, places like Mifflin Township and other township areas, which have a significant number of vacant properties, and also focus on areas within the city that the city land bank just can't do right now. All of our focus primarily is in areas like the South Side, Near East, Franklinton, Hilltop, Linden, both south and north, Milo Grogan, but there are other places in the city that also have foreclosure and vacant housing issues, and the county land bank can help us address those areas.
David and Bexley are on the air. Welcome to the show, David.
Hi, how's it going?
Fine, thank you.
The problem that Columbus has is they have such a large volume of aging homes, and aging homes require huge amounts of maintenance, and there needs to be a complete inventory of homes over 50 years old and a strategy on how to solve that. And then there also needs...
You mean homes in the land bank?
Everywhere, in the whole city. I mean, the cities age. Cities age, and then the center becomes deteriorated. And the center needs to be maintained. And the problem is that cities don't invest in that. Cities only think in terms of tax income. They don't think in terms of how they're going to maintain that tax income. When the tax income drops off because people don't want to live there anymore, it's too hard to maintain the house, it's difficult, then you have a major problem. And I think it's also, there needs to be thought involved in how neighborhoods evolve, how neighborhoods exist, how they're created, how they have the history of neighborhoods. The most successful neighborhoods in Columbus have a solid background and a solid history. And there needs to be more community planners and planners involved in maintaining that history, maintaining the housing, maintaining the strategy, maintaining public space, maintaining services. It's very expensive, but it, in the long term, you maintain that tax base.
Mark Ferencik, you were kind of nodding when he was talking about that inventory of all houses, all structures.
Yeah. What one of the biggest challenges I think that Columbus is going to be facing in the next 10 to 20 years is, again, we've concentrated a lot of our discussion on areas like the South Side, Franklinton, the Hilltop, Linden, all of these post-war areas built in the 50s and 60s. Again, we're talking about housing stocks that are now 50, 60 years old. What's going to become of those neighborhoods? What's going to happen to those areas? A lot of the areas near downtown are being redeveloped. German Village, certainly for a long time, Victorian Village, Italian Village, places like that. But these areas 6-7 miles outside of downtown, what's going to become of those? Is there a plan to deal with deteriorating apartments in those areas? Homes that may not be as architecturally appealing as some of the ones closer to downtown. People are going to have to start thinking about that. And there are some of these areas that are starting to deteriorate already. There's going to have to be some sort of overall plan to deal with that in the fairly near future.
John Turner, what do you say?
Well, I think I agree with Mark, and I think from the land bank's perspective, I think we should work with our county land bank and focus in areas like that. Specifically the Northland area, Westgate, and areas that have developed after kind of these inner city areas, and try to address maybe the one or two vacant properties that are on a otherwise occupied and a street in good condition.
614-292-8513 is the number to call if you'd like to join our conversation about the South Side. I'm talking with Mark Ferencik of the Columbus Dispatch, and also John Turner. He is the administrator for the City of Columbus's Land Redevelopment Office. Judy in Columbus, you're on the air. Welcome to the show.
Did you say Judy?
Hi, Judy. Yes, I did.
Hi.
Hi.
I just want to make a comment. I've been listening with great interest. I'm a lifelong resident of the South Side, the general area that you're talking about.
Mm-hmm.
Have great fond memories of it, but nothing is going to work down here unless they get the crime resolved, because I think that's a major problem. I mean, you don't build new houses and make wonderful neighborhoods. You've got to get the crime gone. And drugs, I know the one gal that they picked up on 6th Street, I think. I won't drive through there. I mean, it's a frightening area.
That's the recent murder-suicide site is what you're talking about, or no?
Pardon?
Something else? Okay.
Well, no, it was 6th Street.
Okay.
Up one of the, the three criminals that knocked out a guard at the prison they were in. I mean, the crime is rampant, and it's really, a lot of it is most of it is drug-related. And I really think they need to focus on that before they start building new houses, because they're going to be destroyed, just as many of our old houses are destroyed, because they're bringing in people. I believe there's a lot of Section 8 there, and I know they have to have some place to live, but they need to, the police or someone needs to handle that carefully.
Well, John Turner, what does come first, the chicken or the egg? I mean, how do you develop this part of the city and keep it, keep that development, of a high value when right behind you comes the crime?
Sure. I would argue that it's very important to address the abandoned properties. You know, a lot of the properties that we find that are abandoned do have occupants, but they're not legal occupants. And you know the efforts of our land bank has been to focus in on those properties that may be adjacent to, for example, what Healthy Family, Healthy Neighborhood is doing in the kind of the northern end of the Southside area, and try to pick off the houses that that make it difficult for them to sell the houses that they're working on. And I think with this this new mayor's initiative, and with it, a substantial amount of money to take the worst of these properties and demolish them, I think we'll go a long way to cut down on some of these crime issues.
Thank you, Judy, for that call. Mark Ferencik, I mean, when you're talking to people in the community, do they feel like there's I was just looking on a Facebook page for Ganther's Place, I think, and they had a picture of a police officer on horseback walking through the neighborhood, which they love. They love that kind of attention.
Right. There certainly is a concern about crime in the area, and I think the caller is correct, is that there are a lot of issues with drugs in some of the areas there. And that's the question. I mean, the one of the goals, I think, of this demolition program, as he said, is if they're abandoned houses, they often attract squatters, drug dealers, some will say prostitutes, and people who live next to these houses are afraid of fires, too, that somebody's going to set fire to the house and then it's going to burn their house down. So because of that perception, who is going to want to invest private dollars also into the neighborhood? You have to deal with a lot of crime problems, and one way to start to deal with that is to get rid of some of these houses that help breed some of the problems in not only the South Side but other areas of the city.
John Turner, there was a letter writer, a letter to the editor in the Dispatch a couple days ago. He wondered what was wrong with former Columbus Mayor Tom Moody's lotteries where people could buy one of the properties for a dollar in exchange for agreeing to bring it up to code and live in it. Whatever happened to that sort of tactic?
Well, there's nothing wrong with it. One constraint that the city land bank works under is the Ohio Revised Code. Under the code, we are required to sell property for fair market value. We get pretty creative in determining that fair market value. Basically, we start with the value is on the auditor's website, do our own evaluation of comps in the area, particularly REO properties, bank-owned properties, and we always offer the buyer to get their own evaluation. So typically, a structure, a house that we sell, can range anywhere from a low of $2,000 all the way up to maybe at the very high end $20,000 for a very, very good structure. But the acquisition price is only a small portion of what it will take to bring that property back to code compliance and to be occupied. And also, here at the land bank, we also think it is important for someone to come up with some money to invest in the property in the acquisition in the front end of the transaction.
In other words, it's not just good intentions. They have to. They should be able to show they have the resources, the capital.
We always review what capital that they bring to the proposed project. But also, I mean, it's a lot like a down payment for a mortgage. We feel that if someone is coming out of pocket, even if it's $3,000, $4,000, $5,000, $6,000 for a structure, they're less likely to bail when things get tough.
John Turner, thanks so much for joining us today. We appreciate it.
Sure.
John Turner, he's the administrator for the City of Columbus Land Redevelopment Office, and he runs the city's land bank. Coming up, we're going to hear from Bob Leakty. He is the executive director of Parsons Avenue Merchants Association. Donna Bates, she's a Southside community activist. And still with us will be Mark Ferencik of the Columbus Dispatch. So stay with us. We'll be talking about the Southside when we return on All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News.
Unless the next Fresh Air, Maya Rudolph. The Saturday Night Live alum co-starred in Bridesmaids. She plays a TV talk show host in the series Up All Night. And she co-stars in the new movie Friends with Kids. Join us.
And Fresh Air begins in 20 minutes, starting at noon on 89.7 NPR News. Thanks for joining us today for All Sides with Ann Fisher. Tomorrow on the program, Becoming Bionic and Finding Hope for Heart Patients. Then in the second hour, All Sides Weekend with host Christopher Purdy and a discussion of the best books for early spring reading. That's tomorrow from 10 till noon on 89.7 NPR News.
Support for 89.7 comes from The Other Paper, Columbus's news and entertainment weekly, on newsstands every Thursday and online at theotherpaper.com.
Looking for an easy way to support our station? How about joining our Sustaining Giving Program? As an 89.7 NPR News sustainer, your membership never expires, and your member card renews annually. Just visit wosu.org/sustainer to sign up. 55 degrees with some light rain in downtown Columbus, showers off and on throughout the day, and temperatures falling today to around 50 degrees. There's a chance of rain for tonight and temperatures falling again to a low of 32. Some sunshine for Friday and a high of 45. All Sides continues on 89.7 NPR News.
Today on All Sides, we're talking about plans to revitalize the city's South Side. Columbus Mayor Mike Coleman addressed its struggles in his State of the City speech last month. Joining us now are two South Side community leaders, Donna Garnes-Bates. She's a community activist. She grew up and went to school on the South Side of Columbus. She goes to church there, and her parents still live in the family home. She is active in the Reeb Hosack Steelton Village Committee and edits a civic newsletter. Welcome to the show, Donna.
Thank you.
Also with us is Bob Leakty. He is executive director, I think the brand new executive director of the Parsons Avenue Merchants Association. He's president of the Marion Village Association and president of the board of the Southside Learning and Development Center. Welcome to the show, Bob.
Thank you. Great to be here.
And still with us, Mark Fearnchuk of the Columbus Dispatch. Mark, once again, thanks for joining us today.
Thanks, Ann.
If you live in the South Side and want to join the conversation, we'd love to hear from you. What do you think it takes to fix it up, to change it, to turn it around? 614-292-8513 or email us at allsides@wosu.org. Now, I'm just going to kick this off with an email from Mike from New Albany. It's harsh. He says the best thing to do is change the South Side into one big park. No use for the mayor's plan because people never change. What do you think about that, Donna?
Let me just
when
say
you can
this.
Regroup, when you can recover.
First of all, it's very easy to criticize and have opinions about size of town or people. But people can change, but they have to feel empowered. They have to have someone to just encourage them to make the change. So on the South Side, and we tend to still focus around Reeb Hosack and Hungarian Village and Marion Village, that's just one small part. But those people do want change, and they're willing to change, but they don't feel empowered when you have things continually taken from you. Schools are closed, businesses closed, homes next to you are abandoned. It really it affects their attitude about where they live, and I think that's the problem that we really need to address. You have to empower the neighborhood, and it takes a lot of communication. So to live in an area that's very affluent and look at another area that's somewhat depressed, I can understand perhaps you say, we'll just clear it and we'll just, you know, do nothing. But that's not what we do. People in the South Side are very proud people. I've lived there all my life. My boys went to school there. And I know that people have a different impression, but I think Mark was correct when he said the area is huge, and we seem to be focused on this small portion. Any area of the city of Columbus could become a South Side of Columbus. Any area.
If you just reach out.
Exactly.
Beyond the city
exactly.
limits. Bob Leakty, what do you say?
Yeah, South Columbus is very diverse. I mean, that's one of the things that drew me there. I have not been here as long as Donna and her family. I'm a relative newbie, bought my house in 1988. My wife and I are going to be you know, carried out their feet first. I mean, this is home. And I say to the fellow from New Albany, I say to anyone listening, have you been here recently? Do you really know what the area is like? There are, it's so easy to dwell on the problems, which are there, and we need to fix them, and we are working on them, and we are fixing them. But there's so many good things that are happening, too. I've been involved as an activist with the Marion Village Association. I've been president there since 93. It is remarkable the amount of renewal that we have seen. And I can tell you in the last 5 to 10 years in particular, the amount, number of young people, people moving in from other cities. We have lots of employees from Abercrombie and Fitch. We have people who work downtown. You have people who work at Easton. You have people from all over who can appreciate and revel in a neighborhood that has unique, diverse range of architecture, unique and diverse range of people, and was not built totally around the automobile. You know, we don't need to put up white picket fences. There's a lot of character there already. So, you know, the trick is to be honest about where the issues are and to try to do something to fix them. And I'm very encouraged by a lot of the trends that I've seen the last few years.
For example?
Well, one thing I can tell you is I've seen more and more community activists on the east side of Parsons, where historically, you know, there have been more issues, you know, just the housing issues and things that we're talking about, and in the southern part, south of Marion Village as well. You know, there are a lot of strong activists in Hungarian Village. There are a lot of, Donna and her mom Carrie have been strong activists in you know, Reeb Hozak, Stilton Village area for a long time. But you're seeing a lot more attention here now. You're seeing, I mean, the commitment for the health center is great. I mean, there's no one solution here. The solution is a range of things. You have the health center coming in. You have the senior citizen complex, 56 units. I toured the NRP's facility in Franklinton that they built, very similar facility.
Mm-hmm.
It's beautiful. If my mom was still alive, you know, she would love to be there. You're seeing a mix of things, and I think you're going to see more revitalization coming from, for example, the leadership of the Grody family. To me, that was one of the biggest story, really, out of the mayor's state of the city. The Grody family, Jim Grody, is from Southside. That family, that many of the family members still live down there and are still active, and to see them step up with both their enthusiasm, their visionary, you know, leadership, as well as, you know, financial leadership is great. And, you know, there's going to be a lot of groundbreaking coming down there. And with Nationwide Children's Hospital, that's the other piece. And we're looking at redevelopment in a lot of areas on the northern part of Parsons. You know, so you're seeing more stuff coming.
The mayor unveiled a slew of initiatives. We talked about some of them already. But none deal specifically with Parsons Avenue storefronts per se. How important do you think that is? And were you disappointed? Donna, do you want to?
For me, if they would review the Southside plan, actually we've had several reviews, but the new health center is going to take on the similarities of the storefronts on Parsons Avenue. So if we could just repeat that pattern heading north. Initially, when I was younger, one of the things that I still miss there, that there was a major financial institution, there was a cleaners, there were small shops.
And there aren't anymore.
There are not anymore. And so, as the caller said, you have to drive out in order to get those things. But if we could repeat what they're going to do with the John Maloney Center throughout Parsons Avenue corridor. The mistake I think we're making, however, is that the South Side is not just Parsons Avenue. It can
right.
be the epicenter, but it is not the South Side. We still have High Street. We have mm-hmm. Lockbourne. I mean, we're such a vast area. Even Great Southern Shopping Center, that's the South
well,
Side.
Well, you know, that brings up, this has been brought up mm-hmm. a couple times mm-hmm. now, the vastness of mm-hmm. the
yeah.
South Side. What about breaking the South Side up into more digestible pieces instead of thinking of it in terms of this huge vastness.
Well, and it is already. I mean, you have this area we're talking about is represented by two area commissions. That's all in addition to the two architectural review commissions of German Village and the Brewery District. So you have the Columbus Southside Area Commission, where there are about 15 different neighborhoods. You know, your Southern Orchard, your Vassar Village, you know, your Southside Can, and that's where Ganther's Place is, and Marion Village and Schumacher Place, you know, all established neighborhoods, all doing their own renewal projects. And as well as the Far Southside Area Commission with their mix of neighborhoods. So there are people working at this at smaller, more tangible pieces. And then we have to work together on, you know, the different corridors, the different places that connect us. I mean, and there's some success stories, you know, too. I mean, when you look at, like, Parsons, for example, look at Planks. Planks has been there since 1939, and it's one of the best places to go. I had lunch here yesterday. You know, best places to go in town for a great establishment.
I like Planks.
Yeah. A couple of years ago, you know, we started to see, I'm sorry, I'm blanking on the place, but Jay runs it. That'll come back to me. Anyway, sorry, rambling. Live radio.
Live radio.
It
kills me every single day.
But you're starting, Hal and Al's. Thank you. Okay. I knew what, if I talked long enough, it'll come back. Hal and Al's was previously a restaurant, then a show bar, and it's been a variety of things. And it's a vegan bar that has one of the best collection of beers in town. All the young folks are going there. Lots of people are going there. There are places like that. That's a great success story. And I think you're going to see more of that. You're going to see more of that on the Avenue, on High Street, on Lockbourne. You know,
it's just one storefront at a time, really, yeah. Is what it boils down to. Matt in Columbus, you're on the air. Welcome to the show, Matt.
Oh, hi, Ann. Hey, I'm an investor, and I purchase properties. One of the things that I've found to be the most challenging is, even though we have the capital and the free cash to be able to redevelop these properties, I mean, one recent example is a house we just closed on and are rehabbing. It took over 7 months just to wrangle through the legal process to gain control and clear title to be able to commence the rehab. And that is a combination of delays from the courts, not knowing who owns the property, tax liens, tax certificates that have been sold to third parties out of state, which really haven't been talked about a lot, that encumber these properties, and then getting all these liens released. And so there's a lot of legal aspects that we start to run into. So even though it may be something that seems fairly straightforward, we have people that want to invest in these and start to rehab them. I personally had about $5,000 of legal costs just to acquire a $20,000 property, which seems kind of amazing.
So, Matt, so the South Side is a desirable place for a developer to go?
Yes.
Besides the red tape and the baloney?
Correct. Because the property values have become so depressed that you can rehab and get the rents. There is demand for rental property. If you look at the rents are getting very tight in the downtown core, and so there is demand.
What about the idea someone brought up earlier about absentee landlords, and they just kind of get the properties rehabbed to a certain point so they can rent them out? They don't really care what the renters do and how they live and that sort of thing.
Well, that's where city code enforcement comes into play, and really that you hold people accountable by registering the rental properties with local agents and hold them accountable as to the conditions of the properties. That really becomes, to me, much more of a code enforcement issue. And also, a good investor is going to want to keep the properties up because that's how you maintain your cash flow over the long term.
Okay, Matt, thank you for your call.
Thanks.
Donna, do you want to?
Yeah, I just want to add that we actually, on the South Side, have a lot of great things. We've got just numerous parks that are run by the City of Columbus. We have rec centers. To me, the problem is that we just don't have the neighborhood schools. But if somebody was looking to come to live on the South Side of Columbus, there are parks, there are bike trails. We've got a lot of good things going on. We tend to only look at those depressed areas and think that's the South Side, but it's not. There are a lot of great people there. There are a lot of churches. We're diverse not only in culture but in religion. We're diverse in the workforce. I mean, all of them are not blue collars. When I grew up, yes, the Buckeye was active. Federal Glass was active. American Standard was active. And Mark is correct. Those people sometimes lived in the area and they could walk to work. Then when those factories closed, that meant that those people, as they aged, their children no longer wanted to stay in the area. So those homes became vacant. And sometimes they just were abandoned because they didn't want to be there. The only drawback to me of anybody wanting to do that is if they have somebody elderly. I mean, most of the homes have two floors, so there's not a downstairs facility for them to use. But other than that, it's a great place to live, and I think if we all work together, it'll be great again.
Mark in Columbus, you're on the air. Welcome to the show.
Yeah, I know we're running out of time. I just want to second what Bob said about the changes going on the south side. I recently helped my daughter look for a place to live around Columbus. We walked a lot of the streets on the south side, and we found a lot of folks moving in, fixing up their houses without support from the city. Neighborhoods are diverse. A lot of people are walking on the street, and we discovered Hal and Al's, which is a great place. So there is a lot of change going on down there, and I just think the folks on the south side are doing a great job trying to put this together.
Thank you, Mark. Email from John. He says there's an excellent, that's all in capitals, Facebook page about the South Side, historical notes and photos called South Side Columbus Alumni. Many people would enjoy this. Search South Side Columbus Alumni on Facebook. We have an email from Bill. He says, I have lived in Marion Village for 8 years and love it. It is a wonderful, close-knit neighborhood with a great history. I am thrilled to see the attention being paid to the South Side. The focus on job training in the new community center will be a particularly big help. My concern is that as these neighborhoods and vacant lots redevelop, that they will lose their character. I am really hoping that some attention will be paid to preserving or reclaiming the neighborhood's architectural character rather than simply building suburban-style houses that don't fit. What do you say? Bob, has that been a concern generally?
I think there are some architectural jewels. I mean, there are different types of. I mean, part of what is appealing to me about South Columbus is talking about the people part, the diversity of the people, the diversity of the incomes, diversity of their backgrounds. And I hope that we will continue to have that. And that's certainly, what makes the neighborhood more colorful and vibrant. But there's also certainly the wonderful, one-of-a-kind historic buildings and interesting places, spots that have character. And I think you definitely want to have that. I mean, it would be easy to bulldoze and make our commercial corridors look like generic strip malls. But we don't need to build in Easton. We actually are one in sense of it's a real series of neighborhoods. And so it's a matter of thinking what's important, preserving what's important. Like we've saved from demolition places like Southwood Elementary School, places like Barrett Middle School. We have wonderful churches. We need to do more of that. And we need to be sensitive with the architectural standards for new houses that are being built, certainly.
Yeah, Donna.
May I add, I'm probably the fly in the ointment on this because our civic group does not want to see what I call brand new builds that don't look like the community. Right. That is our concern.
But there's no code as...
There is no code.
Because you have to make it a special district, right? Isn't that what you have to do?
And for us, we're just asking those that are going to do this project if they will consider the neighborhood in which they're going to put the new builds. Now, if they remodel or do a renovation, that's one thing. But we don't want to look like cookie cutter.
Right.
Well, we're just about out of time. I know, Mark Ferencik, you have a story coming out this weekend in the Columbus Dispatch about the land bank and what it's doing.
Correct. It's, again, I can't promise what day it's going to run.
Coming out maybe.
Maybe.
I know, that's right. We're never
Sunday or Monday, we're never sure. But yes, we're going to be, we're looking at the land bank and who's buying properties in the land bank and how many the city has and that type of thing.
Yeah. Well, thanks for joining us today to talk about it.
Thank you.
And also, Donna Bates, thanks for being here with us.
Thank you.
And Bob Leakty, you're a very busy guy. Thanks for joining us.
Glad to be here.
Thanks for listening. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7. This is WOSU 89.7 and WOSU HD1 Columbus. Streaming online at WOSU.org. 89.7 NPR News, a service of WOSU Public Media.